from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I am ready for Saturday. Georgia-Tennessee is going to be a lot of fun. The atmosphere is going to be electric. The recruiting visitor list is as long as my arm. Jeff Sintel's been doing a great job covering that for you at forum.dognation.com. And this, for me, is just a big-time rivalry. And I'm going to treat the game there that way on Saturday. I'm going to be super excited about it. I hope, no matter how much Georgia may be up by, that fans stay in their seats the entire time, keep the atmosphere electric. We don't get too many of these opportunities. You know, it's only about six or seven chances during the fall to be at Sanford Stadium in a given year, and this is a chance to really rock it out against an opponent that over the course of the years has been a real problem for Georgia, and a chance to get a measure of retribution against the Tennessee Vols here. And I really think the more that you kind of pay attention to this game, even though the outcome doesn't necessarily seem to be in doubt, almost any expert or even, you know, run-of-the-mill average fan would assume that Georgia's going to win here, there's still, boy, is plenty of bad blood on both sides. Plenty of reasons why Tennessee seems to hate Georgia. I think there's some long-standing hatred that Georgia still has for Tennessee here, and that's going to be a part of the subtext for what's going to happen on Saturday. You know, I thought that Mike Griffith did an interesting job of this at DogNation.com this week, writing about the role that Georgia offensive lineman Cade Mays could play in all this. No matter what position he plays on Saturday, Mays was a guy who was at once committed to Tennessee, decommits, flips from the Vols to Georgia, and, you know, in a lot of ways, Mays, I think, is aware of the fact that he's going to have a bit of a bullseye on his back against Tennessee on Saturday. I think we saw some of this a week ago with some Tennessee players that said about Jacob Copeland, who was never committed to Tennessee, but at least flirted with going there. And I think a lot of Tennessee players were a little on edge about Copeland's presence in a Florida uniform this past Saturday. I think Mays gets even more of that. And as a way of kind of reminding you what the story is for Cade Mays heading towards Saturday, let me take you back in time to when Mays, who was a five-star offensive lineman for the 2018 class, when he decommitted from Tennessee. Jeff Sintel, as he's always so good at, gives you the perfect narrative for why this was such a big deal when it happened. Now understand this. The audio I'm about to play for you is Mays after decommitting from Tennessee, but before committing to Georgia. So that's why you're going to hear some things that may sound a little weird to you, but it does sort of tell the story of just what a punch in the jaw this was to Tennessee to lose a player like Mays. Here's Jeff from back then.
Cade Mays is a Vol family. His dad was a team captain and offensive lineman for the Vols in the mid-90s. Prominent Knoxville family, businessman in Knoxville. The only reason that Cade Mays, and these are my thoughts here, the only reason that Cade Mays is now scheduled official visits and taking one to Notre Dame and Ohio State and unofficials to Clemson and Georgia and then officials to follow to Clemson and Georgia. The only reason this is happening is because it looks like to me a vote of no confidence for the Tennessee coaching staff as it currently stands.
So, I mean, imagine that. I'm not even sure what the Georgia equivalent to that would be. I guess it'd almost be like if, you know, one day David Pollack's kid ended up going to Tennessee or something like that, I guess. I mean, it's hard to put into a sort of vision here. Businessman in Knoxville, Tennessee legacy, guy that had been committed to the program, and then he says, this place is not for me. And it's a total repudiation of everything happening at Tennessee when it happens. And obviously, even though Tennessee fans were much like Cade May, sort of fed up with Butch Jones, there's still this attitude of, we got to get revenge on Mays, given the fact that he made us look bad on National Signing Day. And even though the Butch Jones is not at Tennessee anymore, something that Jones said about Mays on the heels of his decommitment, at least alluding to here, I think does sort of set up the mindset that Tennessee fans are going to have about Mays on Saturday. Let me also go back in time here to Butch Jones, who, you know, he can't really speak a whole lot about Mays in particular because it's pre-signing day, but he's obviously going to reference the fact that he just lost a major commitment. And I want you to listen here. And this is one of the reasons why I frankly don't have a lot of respect for Butch Jones. He takes, I believe, an unnecessary jab at Mays here. And the words that Jones uses, I think, will fuel some of the attitude that Tennessee fans are going to show on Saturday. Here is Butch Jones, I think, being a little unfair to Cade Mays. Take a listen.
You know, I think each individual has a different set of circumstances that they're looking for. And, you know, you look at, instance, Trey Smith wanted that challenge of helping us get Tennessee football back to a very, very high level. And he wanted that challenge. So I think each individual is different as well. But it's still at the end of the day, it's forged on relationships over time. And it's ongoing and it's ever developing. And that's every program. That's not just Tennessee. That's that's the world of recruiting that we live in.
So if you don't know the backstory here, that may not seem all that salacious, but here's the backstory that many of you are aware of. Trey Smith was also a five-star offensive lineman, also from Knoxville. He chose to be a part of the Tennessee program and immediately became just about the best player that Tennessee had from the moment he stepped on campus. What Butch Jones says is, Trey Smith, a five-star offensive lineman from Knoxville, this is a guy who wanted the challenge. This is a guy that was up to the task of building up a program. And by comparison, it's almost as if Butch Jones is saying Cade Mays wasn't up for it. Cade Mays couldn't handle the pressure. He couldn't handle the challenge of rebuilding Tennessee. He went to Georgia where it's going to be a little easier because he's going to play with other great players. When you understand the full context of what Butch Jones is saying there, I don't think it's too strong of a phrase to say it's almost slander. I mean, it's almost like, you know, he's dragging Cade Mays' good name through the dirt just to sort of try to save his own skin, his own hide there at Tennessee. And frankly, that's one of the reasons why so few people have really any respect for Butch Jones whatsoever. Now he's making $35,000 as a Nick Saban's errand boy. But nonetheless, Cade Mays is not the only recruit here in this game, at least signee, 2018 signee, freshman for Georgia, that's going to get some attention from the Tennessee side. There's also Quay Walker involved here. Now, Walker on Saturday won't be as big a part of the overall game plan and story as Cade Mays is likely to be. Mays has been playing a lot the last couple of weeks. But Walker will be on the field, and no doubt when Walker is there, there'll be a lot of Tennessee fans who remember what Walker did on signing day when he chose Georgia. But before he chose Georgia, he sent that Tennessee hat into orbit. In fact, I think we have the video here. If you're on, if you're watching us right now, we'll show it to you as just a little treat here of Mays throwing the Tennessee hat, pulling out the Georgia clothes, really stylish with the pants, by the way. What our video doesn't show, and I wish it did, was when Mays puts on the hat to signify the Georgia flip here, flipping from Alabama, it's the straw hat that he puts on, almost like the coach's straw hat, a very classy look for Cade Mays there in that regard, or I should say Quay Walker in that regard, although it's probably fair to point out that some Tennessee fans don't think it's so classy throwing the Tennessee hat. We never had a big problem with that. Kids like to have fun, and Quay Walker's having fun there. But for a lot of Tennessee fans, that just adds the bad blood on their side of this rivalry. Then there's the Georgia part of this as well. And I will say, as a 41-year-old guy here, a part of the bad blood that I think that I have with Tennessee sort of dates more back to some of the bad losses I've seen Georgia suffer against this program over the years. And David Green is going to be with us in a little while. He was one of the players for Georgia that really did a big part in changing that. You know, he won three straight against the Vols. You know, before that, you know, dating back to 2000, Georgia's first win in this series in a long time, it was bad loss after bad loss after bad loss. When Peyton Manning was on campus, it's blowout, blowout, blowout. The 98 game, when game day came to Athens for the first time, and Georgia did not perform well against Tennessee, a Vols team that went on to win the national championship. There were a lot of bad losses. And even in the sort of the next decade, in the 2000s, remember 2006 when Tennessee came to Athens, scored 50-something points, and then after the game in the Georgia locker room, or I should say the locker room at Sanford Stadium for Tennessee, you got Philip Fulmer strutting around saying things like this. Remember this from Fulmer? That's right. A little more than a decade ago, Philip Fulmer came to Athens, saw his Tennessee team put up 50 points and beat Georgia in a big-time home atmosphere that day in Sanford Stadium. And then in the locker room after the game, bragging to his team, saying, how about that half a hundred right there on the field? I think a lot of Georgia fans would say, how about another half a hundred this Saturday on the Georgia side of things? How about Georgia, who's about a, what, 31, 32, 33-point favorite, depending on what day it's been this week at my bookie? How about Georgia covering that number with ease, getting up to the 50, maybe 60, something along those lines? How about Georgia getting a big-time measure of revenge for a program that really had the dog's number in the 90s and dealt Georgia some bad losses in the first decade of the 2000s? How about 41-0 last year just being the appetizer towards the main course of what is another dominant victory against the Vols here? I think for a lot of Georgia fans, that could be pretty fun to watch on Saturday afternoon. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us, no matter how you're getting to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube page, or the Dog Nation Twitter feed, radio at noon, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found. Those of you that subscribe on the Apple Podcast, we appreciate that. Or some of you that check out the show on the worldfamousdognation.com, we really appreciate that too. However you get to us, thanks for being with us here today. Big thanks to Marco's Pizza as well. Now, this is a big sports weekend. You got college football returning tonight to the Thursday night landscape. Got an NFL game. It's what is it? Who's the Thursday night game tonight in the NFL? Yeah, Rams, Vikings. Vikings coming off a bad loss to Buffalo. You got Ryder Cup this weekend. NFL Sunday coming off the heels of being in Athens all day on Saturday. So that's a lot of time to enjoy some Marco's Pizza. And how could you not when you can take advantage of a great offer? Two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each. It's every store, every day, the Italian way. I'm talking about authentic Italian quality pizza. Giammarco family sauce, three cheeses blended, melted together. I love it. I've heard from so many of you who love it too. Really glad to hear about that. And as you watch a bunch of sports this weekend, check out Marco's Pizza to kind of keep you company with all of that. Speaking of Thursday night football, this is a brief aside from, I guess, the more serious main content on today's program. I did see a pretty interesting tweet from our old friend, now Miami coach, former Georgia coach Mark Richt. I guess they're in a Boca Raton tonight. They're calling for a blackout for is it Coral Gables, wherever it is, down near Miami. They're calling for a blackout tonight. In fact, Richt challenging Miami fans to sort of show up in black for this one today against North Carolina. I think we may have a Richt's tweet here who says, blackout in Hard Rock, that's the name of the stadium where Miami plays. This Thursday night, 6 p.m., Cane Walk, 8 p.m. kick. We need some rowdy crowd noise, you family. So Mark Richt getting back to his traditional ways and calling for the blackout here, something we've seen Georgia do under Mark Richt a couple of times. And I sort of am thinking not to look too far past Tennessee, the game at hand for Georgia, but I sort of have a feeling that next week against Vanderbilt may be a little bit of a black jersey type conversation. I don't know that Georgia will wear them. I really don't know what Georgia's sort of thought process and MO when it comes to this kind of stuff is. But my guess is that there may be some calls from some Georgia fans to wear black jerseys against Vanderbilt because it's a night game. It just seems appropriate. Now, Vanderbilt also kind of wears black, so maybe there's a knock against doing that. I sort of get the feeling we're going to be heading for either one way or another, people who want them, people who don't want them, people who are glad they're wearing them, people who are mad that they're not. One way or another, I sort of feel like that we're going to be talking about black jerseys a lot next week on Dog Nation Daily, which some of you are already rolling your eyes about. But that could happen at least a little bit, and it'll be kind of cool to see Richt's team in the black tonight against North Carolina. And I love having college football back on a Thursday night, by the way, too. This is something I just grew up enjoying. Y'all can have the NFL stuff on Thursdays. Give me a Miami-UNC Thursday night game here, especially if it does kind of get rocking and rolling there with Nikosi Perry, a quarterback now. For Miami, that could actually be a good bit of fun. We're going to get Jeff Sintel here in a moment. Not Jeff Sintel. We're going to get our buddy David Green here in a moment on Dog Nation Daily today. Among the many things we'll talk about with David is a big autograph signing coming up this weekend at Tailgate Apparel right there in downtown Athens. Before that, though, speaking of Jeff Sintel, yesterday, Jeff and I doing what we do every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, some really good recruiting talk. And if you've not been paying attention to the recruiting scene as of late, or if you missed Before the Hedges yesterday, take a listen to what Jeff Sintel says about Georgia linebacker commit Tresman Marshall, a guy that Jeff Sintel says of all the potential next Roquan Smiths at Georgia, Tresman Marshall may actually fit that bill more than anybody else. This is a reason why you want to be listening and watching to Before the Hedges each and every week because of nuggets like this from Mr. Sintel.
I'm going to tell you this, and maybe this is a little bit of something you'll read in the Intel blog a little bit earlier, a little bit down the road, or when I get the chance to write it. There was a guy, until I saw all those madman highlights from Dominic Blaylock, there was a guy that was number five on my list, and it is not the guy anybody would think about. I've watched some film of him this year. I've talked to some of coaches in South Georgia. I've talked to some scouts in South Georgia. My number six is probably Tresman Marshall out of Clinch County in Homerville. And I'm going to say this. This is some of the intel I've picked up from guys down south who would know. They said, I know everybody gets so enamored with all those All-Americans and those high-rated guys or whatever. A guy that knows his football told me recently that I think the closest thing anybody should ever say when those comparisons to Roquan Smith, they say Tresman Marshall. Very physical. In the gap, he plays quarterback, he does a little bit of everything. That's the closest thing Georgia has committed or signed to Roquan Smith since Roquan Smith.
powerful words there from Jeff Sintel, and a really bold comparison between Marshall and Smith there. But that's a reason for Georgia fans to get excited potentially about this edition of the 2019 class, and another reason for you all to get excited about Before the Hedge is presented by Kroger each week here on the Dog Nation video channels. Before we talk more football, let me also celebrate some great work UGA is doing in the classroom here and in the community as well, because as you know, a University of Georgia investment has outstanding return. Experts agree that UGA is the number 12 best value public university, according to Kiplinger, with an exceptional college experience inside the classroom and out, and unique career preparation opportunities available for every student. A UGA degree is incredibly valuable. Well, right now, UGA is committed to excellence and affordability for all those seeking higher education. We open doors for students and graduates to succeed at every level and will never stop our pursuit of a better world. But here's where you come in. Here's where you are needed by a UGA. If you're interested in continuing UGA's mission of excellence, you can go to the website right here, give.uga.edu. The website, once again, for those of you who are listening, give.uga.edu, and you can learn how you can invest in UGA's future. We appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza today. Hope you enjoy David Green right now. And he is the former Georgia quarterback, and as I said a moment ago, a guy that factored heavily in some of the great Georgia wins against Tennessee in the first decade of the 2000s. And he's going to tell us later on about a big autograph signing coming up at Tailgate Apparel on Saturday here as the Dogs get ready to host the Vols one more time. David, welcome back here to a Dog Nation Daily. We really appreciate your time. How are you doing today?
Doing good, Brandon. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really well. It's great to have you on the program. And I did mention your name before you kind of came on here today, just in terms of, you know, the impact you had on the Georgia-Tennessee rivalry. And, David, I know you'll remember this, and maybe for some of our younger audience, they may not be quite aware of this. As a redshirt, you guys beat Tennessee in 2000, and then as a player, as the starting quarterback, you won three straight, 01, 02, and 03. But before that, for, gosh, all throughout the decade of the 90s, Tennessee had put together a long winning streak against UGA, unfortunately. How special was it for you to be really one of the central figures in changing all of that? And when you guys first started beating Tennessee, both in terms of a redshirt year in 2000 and then the Hobnail boot game and everything else that occurred after that, I mean, how big of a moment was that for you when you look back on your own career? How much do you appreciate just the fact that you really changed and flipped a rivalry that Georgia fans had gotten pretty pessimistic about?
You know, Brandon, it's funny. You know, as I look back on it now, you know, I appreciate it a lot more now because I kind of look at the big picture. At the time, you know, I was just an 18, 19-year-old kid that was playing football that felt like, you know, all this baggage that we had carried for years, you know, during the 90s and losing to Tennessee the whole time. I wasn't a part of that, and I really didn't I never felt a part of it like a lot of the fans did. And that's the great thing about being young and being a player is, you know, you're just living in the moment, and now it's just we only really are worried about this team. You know, you're not worried about, you know, previous years of sitting in the stadium and watching us get beat, and yet Peyton Manning and T. Martin and all these guys that have been torching us. I wasn't a part of it. And
sure.
So and I think that's such a positive because a lot of the guys, you know, you don't carry some of the baggage that some of the fans do that have had to go through some of the tough times. And but looking back on it now, of course, that game in 01, you know, not only was that a big game, you know, against Tennessee, it was a huge game for our program because
sure.
At that point, you know, Georgia had we'd win the games we were supposed to win, but we would also lose the games that we were supposed to lose. And that was one of the first times that we got to the point where we were winning a big game, and we were able to win a big game that nobody thought we would win. And it kind of showed the confidence that we had that the program, I think, showed a lot of confidence that we were going in the right direction.
Yes, yeah, a big game on the road. I mean, gosh knows how long it had been since Tennessee had lost to Georgia at home before 2001. And it could have been as far back as 1981, if memory serves correct. I mean, it had been a long time since Georgia had beaten Tennessee there in Knoxville. And then the following year, y'all obviously, of course, win the SEC. I mean, the confidence game from that road win, even though it's not the same season, but it was many of the same players, the confidence game from that road win, Hobnail boot and everything else that went on along with it, I mean, how much do you think that put wind in your sails for ultimately going on to win the SEC the following year?
Well, you know, it brought a lot of confidence because it's one of those deals, you know, as you know, get ready for the season, and, you know, Coach Rick got there with a new scheme, a whole new culture, way of going about doing things. You know, you think it's the right way, but the big test is, does it work, you know, in a game
sure.
scenario? And I think we could tell that it was definitely working. We were on the right path. We had the right formula. Now we just got to get better. You know, let's just keep getting better week in and week out. But the plan and kind of the blueprint, I think we had a pretty good feel after that game that, hey, this is right. Now we got something special here. Let's put the pedal down and see how far this thing can go.
And we won't stay, you know, living in the past the entire time we're talking here today, but I think it is worth pointing out that, you know, we obviously talk a lot about the Hobnail Boot game. We talked about that a bit last week when you were on with us. But that wasn't the only, you know, great memory of your time against Tennessee. A couple weeks ago, if you'll remember, Sean Jones made the appearance at a Tailgate Apparel for the autograph signing before one of the games earlier this year. We kind of talked about the fumble return he had for a touchdown in the 2003 game there in Neyland Stadium, a blowout win for UGA. David, I know you're like me. You'll remember the field goal block that Boss Bailey had where he literally leaped 100 feet in the air. Seemed like block the field goal there in 2002. I mean, it wasn't just Hobnail Boot for you against Tennessee. You were actually a part of some really cool moments in this series, even beyond that.
There's no question. And look, Tennessee's got a rich history. They've had a lot of phenomenal players, and they were still really good in the early 2000s. I mean, they were, you know, it was typically between us, Tennessee, and Florida, you know, back then, and typically one of those three where we're gonna win the East. And that was always a tough game. I mean, defensively, they were always putting number guys into the pros. You know, same with the offense. And yet, to be able to come out there and be a part of some good teams that had some good wins. You know, you talk about the Boss Bailey. I'll never forget, like you said, seeing the picture of the poor guy who snapped the ball. That's back when you could jump over the guy from the long snapper. And it, you know, and Boss's, you know, crotch or his waist was all the way well over the guy's head. And Boss is not a short guy to begin with. He's already, you know, 6'3", 6'4". That had to be pretty intimidating for the kicker, I imagine.
I mentioned Tailgate Apparel, of course, 279 East Broad Street there in downtown Athens. It's the old Harry Business Building. Another big autograph signing coming up on Saturday before the Dogs take on the Vols once again. David will tell us about that in a moment. David, I guess let me also get your thoughts here on what happened a week ago against Missouri. A two-touchdown win on the road. Those are always good in SEC play. Some Georgia fans may be a little restless about the fact it was closer than they wanted it to be. What was your overall takeaway from what you saw between Georgia and Missouri last week?
Well, look, I think the standard that we have at Georgia now, and I think the standard that the coaches and the players set for themselves, and I guess the fans we're all following behind, it's a high standard. And I don't think we quite played, to the discipline that we're used to seeing. We've kind of gotten away from it for a long time with, you know, some of the penalties and kind of bonehead plays and, you know, I'm talking about dropping the ball as you're crossing the goal line. I know that's caused a stress with everybody. You know, the one thing that I think has concerned me a little bit more, if I, have a concern, it would just be, and it was kind of this way at the beginning of last year as well, it's just not dominating necessarily in the trenches yet. And it was funny how last year you could tell the team got a lot better. You know, run blocking improved dramatically from the beginning of last year to the end. And same with the defense. You know, we got a lot better. But, you know, right now, you know, from a physicality standpoint, I kind of felt like, you know, defensively up front, we kind of got whipped a little bit at times, which is concerning. We're hoping that's something that, you know, Kirby and is a point of emphasis, and everybody's going to that's the area we're really going to improve on. But that's something long term. When you get into the, you know, the Auburns, and you know, those are the battles that, you know, we got to match up, and we got to perform well in those areas. You know, we want to play championship-type football. But the other thing I want to mention is, you know, we have some explosive players. I'm looking at our receiving core and, you know, some of the catches those guys are making. And, you know, Hardman, how open he was when he faked the corner and came back to the post. I mean, I'm used to seeing guys 15 yards wide open. But we've got some explosive players, and it shows that we can play a sloppy game and beat a good Missouri team and still win by double digits. We've got the potential to be a really, really good football team.
You mentioned the idea of dropping the ball near the goal line. I do want to ask you about that in a second. Let me squeeze in one more question before we get there, though. I don't know how much you had a chance to pay attention to this story, but Kelly Bryant was the Clemson quarterback last year that led them to the college football playoff. He lost his starting job this week to Trevor Lawrence, who was the nation's number one player, rated slightly ahead of Justin Fields for the class of 2018. Lawrence going to start this week. Bryant's announced his decision to transfer. You've had the same kind of thing potentially going on in Alabama with Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa. That seems to have kind of quieted down now, but for a while there was some fear from Alabama's side that Hurts may transfer. What is your thought about how quickly some of these quarterbacks are starting to transfer now, and how well does that speak of Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, the fact that even though Fromm is clearly the starter and Fields looks like a very capable backup, somehow they've been able to coexist and get along with each other, and I think, at least from my perspective, kind of keep the team first here. What do you think about all of this that's kind of going on there in that regard?
Well, it's weird that, you know, the game of college football has changed dramatically, even over the last 15 years. You know, it used to be even, you know, Brandon, when I was getting recruited, you know, coaches really wanted guys that wanted to come play for the University of Georgia. And it was, you know, talk about the Georgia first type mentality. I mean, you look at the guys on the 1980 National Championship team, you'll see about every one of them still at the Georgia football games. They got a lot of pride in their school. And now I think it's more of a business-like mentality where everyone's kind of just looking out for themselves. And I understand, you know, some of it, but, you know, it is tough because, you know, football is like the ultimate team game. And typically the teams that end up, you know, at the championship at the end are the ones that actually play together, and they're very much a team, and it's a cohesive group, and you put the team first. Very hard to win with a bunch of just individuals that have their own agendas. A little shocked that they'd be, you know, mentioning that midseason, you know, that they'd be wanting to transfer, because it kind of definitely shows that you're putting yourself in front of the team. So if you're a teammate, you're going, hey, okay, there's no question where you're, who you're in this for. It's definitely for you first, and, you know, and not the team. So I think the greatest example of, you know, kind of a selfless player is, you know, look at Shock. I mean, yeah. Shock could start just about anywhere. We shared time, and then, you know, he waited patiently. He loved Georgia, loved his teammates. When he had his chance to shine, I mean, boy, did he. I mean, he came out there and brought a, you know, SEC championship to Georgia and was part of, you know, great championships when I was there, and we shared time together and made it work. So it's definitely doable. But this day and time, it's such a business-like approach. Like you said, I'm a little shocked that the guys are, you know, announcing it mid-year.
All right, before we hear about what's going to happen at Tailgate Apparel on Saturday, let me do one more thing here. You joked about, you know, Georgia dropping the ball at the goal line a moment ago. It happened with J.J. Holman on Saturday. It happened with DeAndre Baker against South Carolina. If I put you in place of a Kirby Smart, how are you solving that problem, David? It seems almost perplexing that it is a problem, but I guess it's one that maybe Georgia needs to solve right now.
Well, I think you either tell, you know, the guys, look, when you score a touchdown, you're going to hand the ball to the official. And if you don't do it, you know, then your punishment run on Monday morning is going to be so severe, I promise you, you'll never do it again. And that's the way they treated us as well. You know, you put fear, you make sure that people think about it. And right now, you could tell it just, you know, I think the first one with Baker, you kind of thought was just, okay, that was just kind of a fluke. It won't happen again. But when it happened, you know, second time last week, you're going, okay, this is becoming an issue now. We've got to make sure this doesn't happen again. So I guarantee you Kirby's done something to where they realize that they're not going to do it again, or the consequences, I promise you, were not worth dropping the ball right there as you're crossing the goal line.
Tailgate Apparel is 279 East Broad Street, downtown Athens, the old Harry Bizitz building. Great location. Great way to kind of get in and get some air conditioning and stay out of the heat at least a little bit, getting ready for the game on Saturday. David, you told us last week that you're going to be signing autographs at Tailgate Apparel on Saturday. If you don't mind giving us some more details here, the times and everything that's going to be going on there at a tailgate before the game on Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, looking forward to going to the store. Yeah, I actually hadn't been to a home game yet this year, so I'm excited about doing that. I have my family with me. We're coming from a youth league football game. I'll be getting there on two wheels about 1:30 is one time the signing starts, and it'll run all the way to kickoff. And so, yeah, if you're on North Campus or, you know, downtown, come by and see me. Love to see you. And, of course, Tailgate's got some great apparel. And it's funny, every game people go to now, you see more and more of stuff out there in the crowd. So it's exciting time to tailgate for sure.
Oh, I'll tell you this, David. You know, I'm a fan of Tailgate Apparel. I love wearing the gear around, and it really stands out. You know, we have had events where people show up, they're wearing the Tailgate Apparel stuff, and you can just sort of tell right away it's distinctive. I always kind of, you know, refer to it as sort of the retro feel. I like that. I like the the T-shirts and the sweatshirts and the things like that that kind of throw back to kind of a golden age for a college football. That's the look. It's really classy and clean looking. So I'm a big fan of tailgate apparel, the gear itself. And I know they're on Saturdays, especially with you signing autographs there starting at 1:30. That's going to be what an incredible Saturday it's going to be. David, thanks for sharing your time with Dog Nation, because I know they're going to want to come out and see you on Saturday. And we appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily as well.
Awesome, Brandon. Appreciate it, buddy.
Good stuff there from David Green. And listen, I've been at David with events like this. He's good enough to do some stuff with us around our Dog Nation from time to time. And David is great in the moment here in terms of not just signing your autographs and taking pictures with you. He's just a good storyteller, right? And you hear that. We look back on some of those games against Tennessee, and he has vivid memories of this stuff. I mean, it's kind of cool for me because that was a time in my life in the early days of the David Green era as Georgia quarterback, where I had a lot of free time, didn't have a ton of money, but the money that I did have, I was able to spend a lot of it traveling, going to Georgia games. So huge era for me in terms of being a big time fan, and to have David be as good as he is about remembering those stories and telling stories from that time, that's always a lot of fun. If you meet him face to face at Tailgate Apparel on Saturday, you're gonna have the same experience. It's 279 East Broad Street. I always say it's the old Harry Bissett's building, one of the great original landmarks of downtown Athens. That's where Tailgate Apparel is right now, and you're gonna love that. A couple other quick things before we turn the page here for a moment. I thought that David's words about Kelly Bryant were very interesting, especially given the contrast of how DJ Shockley behaved at Georgia. Shockley was patient. He waited his time, and look how well it works out for him. He's an SEC champion in his own right in 2005, and he remains one of the most beloved Bulldogs of all time. That's sometimes the reward you get for waiting. Bryant chose not to do that. Shockley did. I think it works out better for Shockley in the long run there. And also some pretty pointy remarks from David about the need for better play along the lines of scrimmage. I don't know many Georgia fans that will disagree with that.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, don't forget, coming up in just a moment, current Tennessee play-by-play man Bob Kessling going to be with us. There is a lot going on with the Vols right now in terms of injury at quarterback and some other personnel issues here, how Tennessee bounces back from the bad loss to Florida, and maybe some elements of that game not quite as bad as they seemed. We'll get some intel from the enemy side here from Bob Kesslin coming up in just a moment. Always a great guest for us here on Dog Nation Daily. And by the way, how much did you enjoy David Green a moment ago? Always a terrific guest, and really good stuff there with David. Hope you'll come out and see him at Tailgate Apparel this Saturday on that. Now, let's transition to our SEC Through. And Thursday, if you don't mind me saying so, is about my favorite day of the week to do the SEC Through here on a Dog Nation Daily, because it's a chance to do our MyBookie Best Bets. You've been hearing me tell you about MyBookie for a while now. You know that it's the only service the Dog Nation would recommend, the Dog Nation Daily trusts, because they are known as the fast, no-hassle payout folks. When you win, they take good care of you, and they're going to do it quickly. And right now, they've got an even better offer for you than that. I've heard from a lot of you who've taken advantage of this offer, and I'm glad to know that you're being smart. You know, you're a winner essentially before you get your first bet down, because at MyBookie, they're going to match your first deposit dollar for dollar. But you got to use the promo code DOGNATION. It's all one word, as I like to say, spelled the way that it's supposed to be, DAWG, Dog Nation. That's the promo code that will get your first deposit match dollar for dollar at MyBookie. But you got to find MyBookie online. Simply type in MYBOOKIE, MyBookie, and then when you get in there, first deposit match dollar for dollar when you use the promo code DOGNATION. You play, you win, you get paid. It is simple as that with MyBookie when you use the promo code DOGNATION. All right, here are my bookie best bets for this weekend in the SEC. And I got to tell you, I feel very strongly about a lot of these games. Now, I haven't been all that hot as of late, but right now I feel pretty strong about this. So let me start here with Arkansas, Texas A&M. Again, in Arlington, Texas, they have a series neutral site between these two teams. Texas A&M is minus 21. Now, I'm going to surprise you with my take here on this. It seems like it ought to be getting a lot easier for A&M on the heels of playing Alabama, having played Clemson. We all looked at the start of the season at the really tough stretch to begin the year for A&M and said it really kind of slows down and gets a little bit more manageable after that game against Alabama. But here's where you want to be careful. It's that exhale moment. It's that, okay, now we can take it easy because the gauntlet of the early part of the schedule is over here. And Arkansas right now is the worst team in the SEC. But this is where things get dangerous in terms of A&M maybe thinking it's going to be a little bit easier than it's supposed to be against Arkansas. I don't think Arkansas can win this game, but with a 3-touchdown number – I do like Arkansas to keep it closer. I believe what Wally Hall said in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette this week. People mocked him and made fun of him. We read part of this column yesterday. I think it makes a lot of sense. Go back and look at that Arkansas-Auburn game, a game in which Auburn won 34-3. There was a lot to say that Arkansas was closer with Auburn than the final score indicated, which may mean they're ready to play a little closer with Texas A&M, who simply may just be tired after having gotten whipped by Alabama and dealt with the emotional thing of the Clemson close game. This could be a letdown moment for Arkansas, squeaking out a much closer win than they want to. Arkansas, for me, plus 21 is a MyBookie best bet. Same logic for me on the other side with Southern Miss and Auburn. Now, here's my advice to you at MyBookie, and I hate to give advice that's going to take money out of MyBookie's wallet here, but I think this is the right way to do this. I think 27 is a dangerous number. I think that you want to try to wait until Saturday to see if this thing climbs to at least 28, which, as many of you know, is a bit of a key number here. Climb to 28, probably doesn't go higher than that. But see if you can get Southern Miss plus 28. I think Auburn here, offensively, they've had a lot of trouble. They have not played well offensively in a lot of games thus far this season. So see if you can get a little bit better number with Southern Miss than plus 27. But if you can get Southern Miss at plus 28, that may be worth taking here. Believe it or not, the Golden Eagles from Hattiesburg are a MyBookie best bet for me. That's a strong play, in my opinion. I'm going to stay in the SEC West here with Mississippi State at home against Florida. I think this could potentially be a tough spot for Joe Moorhead. I think there's a lot of emotion in this game. As a former offensive coordinator at Penn State and a head coach at somewhere else before that, Central Michigan, Fordham, before that, he's not experienced the kind of emotion that's going to happen for him on Saturday, but he's got the far better team. At 7.5 is the number, I think Mississippi State here is a MyBookie best bet against Florida coming up. I think that Florida, not as good as they appeared against Tennessee. I think this ends up being a pretty easy win for Mississippi State. I think they cover the 7.5 easy there in MyBookie best bet. I also have a strong take on South Carolina and Kentucky. As we talked about yesterday, there has been a lot of back and forth about this game in terms of the point spread. It sort of flipped back and forth between South Carolina and Kentucky. In this particular case, though, I do believe that the South Carolina Gamecocks are the right side here. I think they beat Kentucky on Saturday. You may even want the money line here on this. Gamecocks, also a MyBookie best bet. I think that could be a lot of fun. And then finally, Ole Miss at LSU. This is a game in which I think that Ole Miss is really dangerous. LSU is an 11-point favorite, riding high, number 5 team in the country. Huge resume being built up here, but Ole Miss can score. And I know that Ole Miss has looked terrible against Alabama. I think there's going to be too much read into that, which I think makes this game dangerous here. Once again, this may be an example where a relatively big underdog is a bit of a live dog here. I'll take Ole Miss plus the 11. And I'll make Ole Miss a MyBookie best bet. So I feel pretty strong overall about the slate of games on Saturday. We'll just see if I end up being correct with my picks there. But those are my MyBookie best bets. Best of luck to you when you're making your selections there as well. And here on Dog Nation Daily, let's turn our attention back here to Georgia and Tennessee on Saturday. A great rivalry renewed in Athens once again, and a guy that's got great insight on all of that. Good enough to join us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza today, is the Tennessee play-by-play man. It's Bob Kessling. Bob, welcome back to Dog Nation Daily. We really appreciate your time. Hope you're doing well today.
I am, Brandon. Thanks.
So let's talk, I guess, first off the top here about what happened against Florida last week, because as we've been pointed out by some, the turnovers, and I think it was 6 for the Vols, end up giving a lot of short fields to Florida there in that game. For Georgia fans who see themselves as a pretty big favorite on Saturday, how much do you think what happened against Florida is reflective of the current state of the Vols right now? Or is that a different game if Tennessee could have just found a way to hold on to the football a little bit more than it did?
Well, you got to remember the first two games, Tennessee didn't have a single turnover. So it was kind of not characteristic of how this team has played. The one thing about the turnovers, yeah, they were big, but they were momentum killers. Tennessee was down 14-3. They tried an onside kick. They executed it perfectly, except for grabbing the football. They had 4 guys around Pirine. Somebody was supposed to block Pirine. Somebody else was supposed to grab the ball, and Pirine just went amongst all 4 of them and grabbed it. Well, then Florida, the next play, goes 65 yards on a touchdown pass. And so instead of being down 14-3 and maybe going down and who knows, making it 14-10. Now you're down 21-3. And that set up the safety, and then that meant the punt, and then that was the touchdown. So really, not getting that onside kick cost them 9 points. So then they had it. It was 23-3, and then they throw the pass down the field, and Austin Pope catches it, and he's going in for a touchdown, and he gets somebody, a Florida guy, struggling to catch up, knocks him goes to tackle him at the 5. Went low, didn't even go for the football. And Pope fumbled the ball through the end zone. So that could have made it 23-10. And then you fumble the opening kickoff of the second half, and that sets up about a 7-yard touchdown run. So not only were they big turnovers, they just were momentum-swinging turnovers. I mean, they were just back-breaking turnovers. So I think in the SEC, I'd be hard-pressed to think that any team could win if they turn the ball over 6 times and get a safety. So that probably was the disappointing thing. Now, I know it sounds crazy. Take the turnovers away. The rest of the time, Tennessee did some good things defensively and did some good things offensively, but the turnovers were just overshadowed everything.
What's the latest on Jared Garantano? I know at one point in time there was some fear that from the Tennessee side that he may be injured enough that he wouldn't be able to play on Saturday. It doesn't quite sound like that's the same case anymore. It seems like he's on his way back to health. Is that fair to say? Can you tell us the latest on the Vols QB here?
Yeah, Coach Pruitt said he came out Sunday and was out throwing and running around, and he's practiced all week, so I would think he'd be the starting quarterback. So he practiced yesterday. They expect him to go through the drills today. So he and Keller Crist were the two quarterbacks out there, but Garantano was getting most of the snaps, so I think he's fine.
The other thing that we saw from the game against Tennessee and Florida on Saturday was the unusual situation involving Cortay Sapp, who left the field. Maybe a little bit of a disagreement, or actually probably more than a little bit of a disagreement between Pruitt and Sapp about what exactly happened there. How has that situation been handled later on in the week? Has that kind of calmed down, settled down, and is there sort of a better feeling about what may have happened there?
Yeah, it was our communication a problem on the sideline, and I think a message was relayed to Coach Pruitt that he didn't want to go in, and he said he was never asked to go in by the coach, one of the position coaches, and so they hashed that out Sunday, so he's fine. It was just miscommunication, and Cortez's been practicing all week, so he should be able to play. He's been a little bit banged up, and one of the reasons I think that the miscommunication, the misinformation came out is one coach was trying to figure out if he was healthy enough to go in the game and all those type of things. So it was, new staff and trying to cut through some communication issues. And Coach Pruitt said that they talked it out Sunday, so everything's fine.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I guess final thing for you, Bob, if you don't mind. You think there's an expectation on the Tennessee side of things, especially from the fans here, that obviously we've paid attention to the point spread. It's pretty imbalanced in favor of Georgia here. You think Vols fans are coming to Athens on Saturday with an expectation that this can be closer? And if that is indeed the belief of many of the fans, what do you think they're going to hang their hat on in terms of being the reason why Tennessee maybe keeps this one closer than the experts would think?
Well, I think they've got some hope that Tennessee's running game can get cranked up again, and they might be able to keep the ball away from Jake Fromm a little bit. This Georgia defense, while it really made some big plays against Missouri, it's still kind of a work in progress. They lost a lot of good players from last year's team, so Tennessee's hoping maybe to exploit that a little bit. I don't think there's any expectations from Tennessee fans that they're going to come down there and wallop Georgia on Saturday. I don't think that's the case at all. What I think the fans here are looking for is this team going to get better? The Florida game kind of knocked a lot of the wind out of the sails because I think the Tennessee fans had convinced themselves that they could play with Florida and that they had a good chance to beat Florida because this wasn't and isn't a great Florida team. And then when they got beaten so soundly, that was really a disappointing thing. So I think that seeing how Coach Pruitt could get this team back up, can he get it refocused? Can he get it to play? I don't think the Tennessee fans think this is the most talented team that Tennessee's ever had, but I think they believe in Coach Pruitt that he's going to be able to coach them up, scheme them up, and get them ready. And that's what the hope is on Saturday that they're going to be able to come out and get a good effort. And Tennessee fans are looking for improvement every week, and So we'll see what happens on Saturday.
And I think, as I'm sure you're aware, Kirby Smart gave a lot of respect to that Tennessee running game this week. So he's certainly expecting a physical performance from the Vols on the other side there. Bob, it is a great rivalry between Georgia and Tennessee. You have called these games a lot over the years, both good and bad moments here from the Georgia side of things, but certainly memorable moments virtually every single year. We really appreciate your time here today on a Dog Nation Daily. Hope you have a safe travels to Athens on Saturday, and we'll look forward to having you back here again on our program very soon.
Great. Thanks. Always good to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Good stuff there. Yeah, good stuff there from Bob Kessling. Terrific voice of the Tennessee Volunteers. Good insight there in terms of what, you know, and very realistic assessment, by the way, from Tennessee fans who are, you know, maybe realistic in some respects, you know, a little optimistic about the ability to maybe run the football there. And as he said, keep the ball away from Jake Fromm. That could be a very interesting thing to pay attention to. By the way, before I do the Gatorade countdown, let me also say that obviously there was a lot of, you know, online rumors and things like that of, you know, various natures about Fromm yesterday and some sort of injury. That's been, I think, largely refuted out there. So no worry, no concern on that. Sounds like Fromm is good to go, at least based on some of the stuff that I've been hearing. So nice to know on that. And with that said, we'll turn our attention here to the thing we do every day on this program, our Gatorator Countdown. 30 days from right now, Georgia travels back to Jacksonville, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We think they beat those lousy, stinking Gators once again. We're looking forward to that Gatorator Countdown every single day. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.